Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Grant Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June 22nd, 2020. Alex Brown is back on the show with me again for another episode here. Alex, how are things?
Very good, Graham. Still sort of surviving the unfolding. I guess we're slowly moving out of lockdown here in the UK. Things are good.
Yeah, things are less and less confined here too in France. The president made a somewhat surprising announcement over the, it's been about a week now, where he basically is putting kids back in school and restaurants and bars are open. So it's really a very dramatically different environment now. And we'll just see how it all unfolds. I think no one really knows. So you just have to kind of stay on top of things. Otherwise, I did want to mention, this is the 50th episode of Wiretaps.
Wow.
So believe it or not, I guess it was a year ago or so that we started doing Wiretaps, because I don't believe we've missed a single week, because I know, I remember I got a little bit in trouble on vacation recording one at some point in a hotel room. But I think, we've managed every week for about a year now. So 50 episodes in, and it's flown by for me. Maybe not for you, I don't know.
50 episodes in and we've got 5 listeners. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. So in any event, yeah, appreciate all the work you do over these, it's been obviously 50 shows and you've shown up for all of them. So I really enjoy doing this with you, and all the work that goes into picking out these profiles. And you've picked out a few this week, a couple of ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire entry. Before we get into that, anything you want to share updates-wise? I know things continue to just be insanely busy at clearadmit.com because of all the late applications, but what have you been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really strikes me in particular other than we're seeing movement off wait lists.
Yeah.
We're also seeing candidates waiting for schools to release decisions from these extended round deadlines. So there's a little bit of anxiety, and I would maybe add a little bit of frustration from those folks on the extended rounds, because they want a little bit of sort of closure in terms of, all right, what are my options going to be this season? So right now they don't even know their full suite of options, let alone what the experience is going to be like at the beginning of the fall semesters. So still a lot up in the air, a lot of conversation, it is pretty fascinating to be a sort of to be able to listen in a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's happened is, as I alluded to, I think it was last week or the week before, we've started to turn the page a little bit at the same time on the next season, right? So just as everyone's scrambling with these late rounds, there are folks, listening to this podcast, but also on the website that are clearly looking at the coming round. And we've been publishing, deadlines. Schools are releasing their admissions deadlines. There are more and more of those up on our site. I think I saw Chicago Booth up there. We've got essay topic analyses. So when a school announces their essay topics, we always break them down, give you a lot of advice and pointers on how to begin thinking about those essays. And we've already run the 2021 essay topic analyses for Stanford, Wharton, Cambridge, Ross, so there are a handful of schools, Columbia. So you can check those out on the site, but those are really useful. I think that's the thing we hear over and over again from our site users.
And honestly, in that regard, Graham, not to blow our own trumpet, as it were, but we have heard from a couple of folks this week that have, they're off to their particular schools this upcoming season, just really grateful to have been able to spend time on the Clear Admit site over the prior several months, learning a lot about the process. So whether it's sort of connecting with other folks on the wires, using our essay topic analyses, using our interview archive in terms of preparation for interviews, preparation for applications, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it is kind of fun this time of the season when you start getting that kind of feedback from the folks that are getting ready to embark on the next journey of their lives. So it's absolutely fantastic, Graham, really.
Yeah, and I got a great email last week where it was forwarded to me by one of our colleagues, but it was basically someone wrote to Clear Admit to the general email address or something, or responded to a newsletter, I guess, and just said that exact sentiment of hey, I got into my school, I'm really, love the community, whatever it was. I mean, they were just being really thankful, but they said it all with the kind of caveat. They said, I know you probably never read these emails. Yeah. And I thought that was funny because, you know, I actually wrote the guy a note back because I just thought, wow, he took the time to write to us. And so I'm going to take the time to write him back. So that was great. One other thing, you know, as you know, I don't know if you're nervous or not, but tomorrow is a really big day for us because we're kicking off the Clear Admit Admissions Academy, and we're going to be live with our first class where we're going to talk about what it means to apply to business school in this kind of new normal with COVID-19, and also kind of a primer on how to spend these initial months as you begin working on your applications and your strategy. But that's tomorrow, and I think we're going to be full. It looks that way. So I'm really excited about that, and I hope you've been practicing and are ready.
Yeah, you had me skip a heartbeat then, but you're very clever about this use of the word tomorrow. Tomorrow as in when this podcast is being published, not actually tomorrow.
Yes, oh, sorry.
Otherwise, I'd be in a lot of trouble. But yeah, no, I'm actually really excited. I know we've got some great content for the initial webinar, and you know, things are going to be different applying to business school next season. I think hopefully we can share some of our own insights in terms of how we think that's going to play out and what folks can do over the next, what I would say, the 4-month period, i.e. back end of June to the back end of September, to really set themselves up for terrific round one sort of applications or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, well, without further ado, let's dive in and get into our wiretaps reviews here. So the first, let's see, we're going to start with a couple of Apply Wire entries, and then we'll do our Decision Wire at the end. So this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is hoping to start business school in the fall of 2021, and they're currently considering Michigan Ross, Kellogg at Northwestern, UCLA Anderson, and UT Austin McCombs. They have been working in the airline sector, so doing revenue management and sales. Certainly not a dull, never a dull moment right now in that industry. And they want to ultimately do entrepreneurship. They have a bunch of ideas. GPA was 2.68. They've got 6 years of work experience. They're located in New Jersey, and they'd love to end up in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles when they're done with business school. And they indicated in a rather lengthy note to us that they know the GPA is a big concern. And they did mention there were some extenuating circumstances, so medical issues and stuff. And they also mentioned that they haven't yet taken a standardized test. It looks like they're planning to take the GRE, and they're hoping for high 320s, maybe even low 330s. But of course, that's all to be determined. They've got some good volunteer and community service work, and their job does sound fairly impressive in terms of the way that they've moved through different aspects of working in the airline sector and dealing with, you know, the business side of that and a lot of the kind of finance and sales stuff. So that's kind of the profile. What do you make of this person and their school selection? Because, you know, they have these four schools on the list, but what, you know, what's your take on this candidate and how they're going
to
do?
Yeah, I mean, interesting candidate. First of all, what stood out to me was they're working in the airline industry, Graham. So I was just wondering if they're still working. I mean, I know that's a dreadful thing to say. But, you know, if you think of different industries that have completely been impacted by COVID-19, the travel sector is very high on the list, you know, along with tourism and so forth. So depending on their particular, you know, where in the airline industry they are, they actually responded when I asked them if their job was in jeopardy, that they think they're going to be fine through at least the fall, winter. So if that is the case, then they're in pretty good shape, because that's, you know, that they need to be able to maintain you know, good work experience and so on and so forth up through the time that they apply. That would be great. I know in our webinar next that we kick off tomorrow, as you say, that we'll talk about, you know, what candidates that perhaps have been made redundant or furloughed or whatever the right term is, what they need to be doing over the next several months so that they can take advantage of this period of time that they're not working, right? Anyway, it seems like in this case, this person has good work experience, has done well, and reckons that they've got opportunities to continue that. So that's very good. The real issue with their profile, as they know, is their GPA. And we talked about this before we came on air, Graham, is, you know, can work experience and doing really well at work compensate for the academic profile? And really, our answer to that, and you can confirm this or whatever, but I'm taking it straight from what you told me, so I would imagine you will confirm it, is really admissions committee is going to look at these sorts of issues in separate buckets, right? So they're going to look at your academic profile, they're going to look at your work profile, then they're also going to look at your non-work profile, your extracurriculars and that kind of stuff. And if you're applying to the top schools and this candidate's targeting that sort of M7 to top 16 type program, then they're going to expect to see excellence across the board. And really, one doesn't necessarily always going to compensate for another. So what does this candidate need to do? They obviously need to blow the GMAT / GRE, whatever they take. They say they're going to take the GRE out of the water, and they think that they're going to be able to target a high 320, 330 score, which is great. So what happens when you have a really high test score and a really low, which frankly is the case here, a really low GPA? Well, you have some context for the GPA, so some medical issues and so on and so forth. It also shows to the admissions committee that when the candidate is focused, they can do well, but it's hard to get the candidate focused. So if you've got a four-year academic career and a low GPA, it's hard to justify that you're going to stay focused consistently over a significant mm-hmm. period of time and do well in your academics. So they're going to have to overcome that. So my biggest piece of advice to this candidate is go take some classes. If that delays your candidacy from round one to round two, doesn't matter. Get two or three classes, whether they're online, and maybe it's, you know, HBS Core or, you know, something that sort of is a more of an on-ramp to study doing your MBA, whether it's something like that. But go do it, and do it very, very well, just like you do your test score. And then I think you can become really competitive for the types of programs that they're applying. But frankly, Graham, I think if the candidate doesn't do that, they're putting themselves at pretty big risk, especially at the top 16, top M7 type program that they're targeting.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think, yeah, you could tell in reading the comments from this candidate that they were hoping that their work experience, which does look really impressive, I mean, they've got some interesting work that they've done involving like pricing strategy for $300 million contracts with the Latin America region. Like, they've done interesting stuff in the airline industry.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, you know, for one reason or another, admissions officers, you know, they bucket this, like you said, and they want to make sure that academically you are able to excel. And because the first semester in business school is grueling. I mean, it's really, you're just overloaded. A lot of the courses are heavily quantitative. It's not much fun, to be honest, having been through it. So I think, you know, they want to make sure you're ready for that. And I think if this person is able to kind of get a great score on the GMAT or the GRE, they can begin to make the "that was then, this is now, I had health problems." Mm. But as you correctly point out, there's always that fear of, oh yeah, well, when they put a test in front of this person, they're fine. But when it comes to a sustained, you know, performance is not there. Yeah. So I think they, you know, yeah, taking a couple of classes, take like, you know, stats and accounting or some basic foundational stuff. Calculus is another one we see people taking. Those are all good classes to take. Or like you say, maybe an on-ramp type thing like HBX Core.
Yeah.
But they've got to take that stuff, get A's, and then they can have an optional essay that says, look, I recognize college was really subpar. Here's why. And here's the latest information you have on my academic aptitude in this test and these two classes I've taken and gotten A's in. If they want to go to Ross or Kellogg or, you know, most of the schools on their list, which are all kind of top schools, they're going to need to do something here, because I'm just worried about it otherwise. Yeah. I think it's a big hurdle.
I think another way to look at it, Graham, is imagine that, you know, you have another candidate has this very similar profile, but they've got a 3.5 GPA instead of a 2.68. I mean, how's the ADCOM going to want to favour the 2.68 unless the candidate has taken these extra steps?
Yeah.
And also thinking, why would the ADCOM want to risk bringing in a candidate that they really like because they've got a really good work profile, but with this blemish on their undergraduate GPA, it does become a bit of a risk. So they can reduce their risk by not, you know, by going with the other candidate with a 3.5 GPA and a decent work profile. So you might have a great work profile, but they might be more inclined to go with someone that has a better basis on the academic side, perhaps not quite such a strong work profile, but good enough anyway. And go that route. I'm not saying they necessarily will do that, but they don't need to take the risk is the point. The other thing that I would say, I know we spend quite a lot of time on this candidate, but these goals are interesting, right? In the long run, they want to run their own startup. That's fantastic. But does the candidate already have the idea of what that's going to be? Have they got a real passion to make an impact in a particular niche that they've discovered through their work in the airline industry, or something like that, that makes their story more impressive and more cogent? Or are they like, you know what, I kind of like to be an entrepreneur. I think that would be cool. That's what I'm going to put as my goal. So making sure it's not that latter.
Yeah.
And it's really based on some substance.
It's funny you brought that up, because that was the only other thing I wanted to mention, was that, yeah, the goals seem a little fluff to me. There's just not enough there. And even the short term, they talk about getting into biz dev or brand management or product marketing.
Yeah, which is basically being an entrepreneur before you actually let loose on your own business.
Right. And but I was sort of like, well, in what domain? Like, you know, is there a thread here with the airline sector, or is that just being dropped entirely? And, you know, so they need to weave this together a little bit better. So in any event, obviously, best of luck to them. Really appreciate the post, as always. We love seeing everyone's profiles. And for this person, I think, you know, we've got some concrete steps they can take to increase their odds of getting in.
Yeah, and like we said, great work profile. So impressive, I would say, actually, based on what they've told us. So hopefully, if they can make these steps or whatever, they'll end up in a school that they deserve and do very well. That would be great.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's also looking to start fall 2021. They have a list of schools that includes Berkeley, Tuck, Duke, HEC, INSEAD, LBS, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, Chicago, and UCLA. So a long list, 11 programs, but they're, you know, at the beginning of this process and may whittle that down. They're currently working as a data scientist for a Fortune 50 company, and they're thinking about consulting or tech when they're done with their MBA, looking at companies like Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Bain, Booz Allen, BCG, Deloitte, and McKinsey. GMAT score is 720, and the GPA is an 8.45, and that's because this candidate is from India, and in India, it's actually usually done as a like percentage out of 100, so it's really like an 84 out of 100 type, or we could call it an 85 if we're being generous, out of 100, and they've had 3 years of work experience. They do mention, Alex, that they love the podcast and have been listening to it for almost a year. I feel like they should just get into business school and have a scholarship for achieving that feat alone. But, you know, we'll see what the schools have to say about it. So they also, you know, had some questions. Like they said they went to a great undergraduate institution, but it's not an IIT, which is the very famous set of kind of engineering institutions in India. They did a dual degree in computer science and econ. And they're thinking of taking that GMAT again, that 720, to improve. So there's a lot of, they give us a lot of information. They have some interesting outside activities. I think we'll get into those. But what do you make of this candidate on the surface? And you had some exchange with them on the site. So
yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously, you reckon looking at this stuff that this candidate's going to come from an overrepresented population in terms of applying to business school. So one of the standard pieces of advice for a candidate like that is to apply early. Mm-hmm. So round one, early decision, that kind of stuff. And the hard part will be for the candidate to sort of differentiate themselves, right, from being that sort of overly tech-focused engineer type candidate. So, I mean, those are going to be challenges that they face. That said, the other side of it to me is, and we talked about this before we came on air a bit, Graham, you know, if I'm a consulting group and I'm looking to hire from, you know, top business schools, I think I'd be quite interested in hiring folks with a strong technical background that do this, what machine learning, artificial intelligence, and all this kind of groovy stuff that's really coming to the fore in, you know, the marketing function, for example, right? So I teach some digital marketing stuff online, and I know how important now, obviously, data analytics, machine learning, and artificial intelligence, and all those things are. So I've got to imagine they're coming in more demand from these consulting firms. So maybe we shouldn't necessarily sort of bucket all these folks into this sort of overrepresented pool if they can really show that they've done some really impactful and interesting stuff with machine learning and artificial intelligence. So if they're simply enrolled where they're running the numbers and providing reports, it's probably not that interesting. But if they're sort of creating algorithms and doing stuff that, you know, that substantially saved their firm significant dollars or identified a new audience or did something substantial in what they're doing that they can point to, I think business schools might be quite into, you know, really looking at that. I think this candidate could have a lot of upside. I mean, the other thing to think about is, you know, they've got a 720 GMAT. They say they're going to retake it. I mean, I'm like, you know, my initial reaction to always to that is, you know what, your GMAT is not going to not get you in, right? If you've got a 720, they're going to be much more interested in other stuff in your profile to make that decision. But I've started to come now to the thinking that, you know what, if you got a 760 or a 770, like if you did something ridiculously high on your test score, then yeah, maybe that does and make someone look a little bit harder at you. So maybe if they can get a super outstanding score, that might be impactful. If they get a 730, 740, it probably won't make much of a difference because, again, a 720 is already pretty ridiculously good. So all that said, Graham, I was actually pretty excited, depending on what they've actually done. Mm-hmm. With all this sort of really cool stuff that I think, again, top consulting firms are getting more and more interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you on the data science side of things. I think, a lot of the firms on their target list for consulting might be thrilled to have someone who's got a lot of, you know, heavy lifting in that space, given how important that is now. You know, with the GMAT, I looked at the percentiles, you know, and so they have like an 80th percentile on the verbal and an 85th percentile on the math. Obviously, the math is really hard to move a lot higher than that because of the way that the scoring is now working. But the verbal, there is some room there to grow. And I think one of the things that worries me is you have like someone with a sort of engineering background, data science background, and there's this fear of can they make that leap into kind of the business side of things and to, you know, running something or whatever. So that's always, you know, what we used to say about, I think accountants fall into this, you know, kind of zone as well. Engineers, you know, sometimes people say, oh, better with numbers than people, right? And so that's going to be something that this candidate needs to overcome. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because sometimes that is a little bit tied to the verbal score. Mm. Like if you see someone who just doesn't have the chops on the verbal side, it can be a worrying signal. So, but I hear you. Like I think this candidate has a lot of potential. They have a few years of work experience. They're working at a big time company. Presumably it's a household name, given that it's a, you know, Fortune 50 company. And they've also done a lot of other things outside of work. So, they've
won awards doing this stuff too, right?
Right.
So they're winning data science awards, yeah. And or finance or whatever. So they're doing very, it looks like they're doing very well at it.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, so my view is, I hear you when you say 720 is a good score. And, you know, sometimes you kind of are like, why would someone fuss with it? But if you look at their list of target schools, you might say, well, you know, it's kind of average, right, for the target schools. And so if they think they can take it again and get a 750 or better, then why not? It'll help them to stand out in a pool that is often filled with, you know, Indian engineers with 750 GMAT scores, right? So they might want to boost it just to make sure that they're not losing some points in an area that, you know, is a competitive area. So
this person has done some other good stuff working with NGOs and various other things, and applying their data analytics skills, their data science skills, to NGOs. So that's very good. And that's quite important too, right? So showing that sort of social impact side. And it seems like they have some passion and interest for social impact post-MBA, which, again, as long as they can tie that to some sort of substance and not just saying it simply because they know that's what's interesting to business schools. But but that kind of stuff does definitely help. If they're truly passionate about making an impact and a difference in the long run, well, that's the mission statement of top-tier schools. So that would be very good.
Agreed. Yeah, and I think the last thing I should say is, you know, one of the things that did stand out to me that may combat this sort of numbers person background is, you know, they started a film club at university. They do some other things, you know, that are not necessarily related to kind of business and numbers and stuff, right? So, and they also mentioned surfing is a hobby, although they wrote surfing in the water. And I sort of wondered, like, what else would one be? I was trying to figure out what that
not,
means.
Not web surfing.
Maybe. In any event, I do want to thank this person, as we always do, for submitting their post and for the obviously the compliments about the podcast. We're happy to make your drive commute a little bit more tolerable. So anything else on this, or should we move on?
No commute right now, sadly.
Yeah, that's true.
let's move on. Yeah.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. And this is a DecisionWire entry. It was submitted by someone who is undecided. They've been accepted at Cornell Johnson, but are on the wait list at Tuck and Stern. It sounds like they also applied to USC and UCLA Anderson, but they withdrew from a wait list at Marshall and actually didn't make the cut at Anderson. So they're trying to figure out their next step. Like, they're really excited, they say, about Johnson. They're kind of planning to go there, but they're wondering, like, at what point should they withdraw from waitlists at Stern and Tuck? They're just wondering, like, you know, is it worth giving up a deposit at Cornell to go to one of those two programs if they get in? And also just, like, how long should they, you know, play this out? And, you know, the other background is they have a 700 on the GMAT, a 3.0 GPA. They're located in Los Angeles, and they want to get into investment banking. So that's kind of the background. You and others on the site had dialogue with this candidate, and it was kind of interesting to see. So I'll let you kind of take it from here. But what do you make of this, you know, decision? I mean, they right now only have one real option, but they're sort of wondering about these wait lists.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, we're starting to move into the summer. You've got admitted to Cornell, which is a very good program, especially given their interest in investment banking, right? So Cornell has a great feeder into the investment banks in New York and so on and so forth. So quite frankly, they've got a great option. If I was this candidate, I'd go all in on that option and really sort of buy into the fact that I'm going to Cornell and you know, do whatever other activities are involved in being a matriculated student at Cornell, because you don't want to be behind the curve in terms of networking and socializing, whatever you're able to do during COVID-19 in terms of ramping up and getting ready for classes, right? That all said, I don't see why you would cut yourself loose from the other wait lists. I would just keep them, you know, you're on those wait lists, that's fine. I probably wouldn't be aggressive anymore at sort of maintaining your status on the wait list. So I would go all in on the Cornell deal. But if Tuck came knocking, for instance, in a month's time, and said, look, we've now got a spot for you, we're going to meet you off the wait list, then cross that bridge when it comes, and then make a decision based off of Tuck versus Cornell, for example. It could be Stern versus Cornell if you got off the Stern wait list at that time, and then recalibrate your options. But at this point, I don't see why you wouldn't, one, go all in on Cornell, and two, stay on the Tuck and Stern wait list, Graham.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. I mean, I get that for a lot of people, I mean, especially if you're at all like a planner, you know, that knowing where you're going and you know, you got to get a house. You got, I mean, there's a lot of factors that maybe their significant other that's going to move with you or whatever it could be. There are a lot of factors. And so I get that people want closure. I do think there's going to be continued movement on wait lists. And so, you know, it's possible, right? And I think you could argue that, you know, Stern and Tuck, they typically outrank Cornell or something. But as you correctly point out, you know, Johnson has a great pipeline into investment banking in New York. And so I think that this person is not going to go wrong. I also think, and maybe this is, I don't have, you know, access to the school's wait list. I can't really predict the future. But if you look at this person's stats, 700 GMAT, 3.0 GPA, they're probably not going to be the first one to jump off the wait list at an admissions officer who's trying to fill their class at Stern or Tuck, where, you know, averages in both of those academic metrics are, you know, north of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, yeah, just settling in on Cornell, assuming that you're going to go there, making every plan along those lines. And then, as you say, if they get in, they can always make the decision, and that might mean losing a deposit on an apartment as well as the deposit on tuition. So they can think about that. But I would say, I mean, obviously, if they want to narrow it down and, like, you know, figure out, okay, I only am interested in Tuck and not Stern or vice versa as the school I want to kind of stay on the wait list for. But I also, you know, these are different. So on the one hand, I could understand Tuck and Cornell, right? So you're in at Cornell. You stay on the waitlist at Tuck because, oh, you know, people often say it's higher ranked, or maybe you know, really when you started the process, it was at the top of your list or whatever. The thing that's interesting for me here about Stern is that it provides a really different experience, right? So obviously there's some positives to that, right? It's in New York City, heart of investment banking world. You know, I mean, there's just many, many positives being in New York, right? But it's also really different from being in Ithaca or Hanover. And so I find it interesting that it's still in the mix. You know, if they're really excited about Cornell, I'm assuming that some of that excitement comes from, you know, Cornell's like close-knit community and location and, you know, all that that means for kind of your, you know, business school education. So I don't know. I wondered about like why would they stay on both lists? Maybe they have a preference. Like maybe they were really dying to be in New York City all along, and so they're going to stay on the NYU list, or maybe they really are craving this kind of more rural type experience for business school. So that was just a thought I had.
Yeah, I just assumed they just wanted to leave Los Angeles, but that's a little, and of which Cornell, Tuck, and Stern would allow them to do. But I'm joking, obviously. LA, I'm sure, is a great place.
You've never been?
So I have been, and that's okay. Why I said that, because I was not a big fan of my experience in LA. But nevertheless, I know lots of people love it.
Yeah.
So,
I think, very good. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
You know, yeah, see what happens. But again, I don't really see the point in abandoning wait lists unless you're absolutely convinced you would not go to that particular school over the offer that you've already got. And clearly this candidate doesn't seem to be quite in that frame of mind yet. But at the end of the day, go all in on Johnson for the time being. And as you quite rightly pointed out, you know, the stats might suggest that Johnson is going to be the only option. But, you know, there might be some really interesting stuff about this person's profile, for sure, that has got them, you know, they've been very successful, right? So obviously there must be some really good stuff in this profile. I mean, best of luck. They're a star contributor on the site, so I'm, you know, gunning for them to do very well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, come February in Ithaca or Hanover or New York City, they might be missing LA a little bit when it's freezing cold and snowing, but we will see. Thanks to that person for putting up the post and for all the contributions on the site. You correctly point out they're a starred contributor, which means, remind me, they've already had at least 30 people like comments that they've posted, so that's terrific.
They're catching up with you, Graham.
Oh no. I've been awful of late. I need to get back on the horse posting. So Alex, thanks for picking these out. We'll be back next week for I guess what's gonna be our 51st episode of Wiretap. So thanks to everyone. I don't know if anyone's listened to all 50, but if you're out there, you probably deserve a medal of some sort. And Alex, I'm not referring to you. I don't know if you've listened to all 50.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll be back in 1 week's time. And yeah, thanks to everyone for tuning in, as always.
Yeah, good luck, everyone. Stay safe. Take care.